Bill Tompkins, and certainly one of the most remarkable programs we've ever done. The pictures alone are worth the price of admission, as they say. We don't know who took the pictures. We don't know how they came here, but many of them were brought over by spies. Some probably were captured after the war. Some have made their way onto the Internet one way or the other. But we've collected as many as we can, thanks to Frank. He really worked hard on this. There's some really stunning pictures, daylight pictures of these discs just flying around. And it's clear that the Germans had them. They had them. No question. Two programs, the regular military and then the SS, apparently developing them scientifically. The other issue, of course, is one of crew members. How do you fly a fleet of these things with trained crew when you're running out of time at the end of the war in 1944-45? It becomes very difficult. Or do you take off and move them all to the Antarctic? All right, things to think about. Now, back to Bill Tompkins. I got an email from somebody, and I did ask, the Foo Fighters, those round white globes of light in daylight and at night that were reported by many U.S. bomber crews, you can find newspaper clippings about them if you look up Foo Fighters, what were they made of? Do we know? Were they just charged energy spheres that were released to go up and work their way around the bomber formations? Or were they some kind of a mechanical device that gave off light? Do you have any knowledge of that?
I have to say that I do not. That's not something that I'm aware of.
All right.
I would appreciate anybody in the audience trying to fill us in. In fact, that's one of the reasons for this program. It's not just to try to take one person's ideas or whatever he's supposed to have done. We're trying to get the audience, basically, we're trying to get them knowledgeable.
Right.
And then, most importantly, to get them involved. Please, get involved in this.
Yeah, and there are people out there who know a lot. So hopefully you'll be able to contact me or George Feiler. He's certainly available. Frank is available, right, with George. So if you have something you want to share, we will protect your identity. Of course, there's no secrecy anymore anywhere, but it would be nice to have more data to help fill in the blanks. What we're presenting tonight is a structural framework of something that has been rumored and talked about ever since World War II, and I think we have presented, through the good graces of Frank and George and certainly Bill Tompkins, who was right there, proof that the Germans had advanced disc technology, anti-gravity, electromagnetic, whatever you want to call it, they had them. And some were given, and then some were constructed by the Germans after that. We want to talk about Paperclip a little bit, then we're going to go back to these two girls who look suspiciously E.T. to me, but whatever. If there was a poster for a Nordic blonde, Maria Orsic would be the poster girl. She was
sure.
It. Absolute
sure.
Perfection in terms of artistic and the rest of the feminine form, as they say. Okay, now, let's talk a little bit about Paperclip, Bill, because you mentioned that you wanted to discuss that slightly, and invite all of you to keep looking at these pictures. Just ask yourself, are these all fake? Uh-uh. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Okay, go ahead, Bill. Tell us a little bit about Paperclip.
Okay. Paperclip was where the United States and the Allies, but particularly the United States, went into Germany after the war and acquired everything that they could possibly get their hands on in the form of advanced German technology. UFOs, anti-gravitation propulsion, all types of weapon systems, totally different than anything that we had. And so in addition to that, they made arrangements to bring a large number of the German scientists and technicians and engineers to United States. And this is where Dr. von Braun came over, and Dr. Liebes, who then ran... He ran
the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA. NASA was a German enterprise over here. German, World War II, scientists staffed it, made it go. They were it. It was a phenomenal thing.
Jeff, you might want to also remind your audience that Dr. Divas was also the director of Peenemünde.
Okay, this is crucial. Now, Peenemünde is where the V1 and V2 and V, what was it, the V4? I forget what they had a long three-stage or four-stage that could have hit New York had they finished it. So he came over here and ran NASA. This is one of the big secrets of decades and decades, that it was German brilliance that put us on the moon or wherever we went up there. It was all about that. And remember when they scrapped the Apollo program after the last flight? They scrapped it. They took that Saturn boost rocket, destroyed it, destroyed the launch pad, apparently, all the blueprints for it. They didn't want any more built. And a lot of discussion about why. Certainly part of the discussion revolves around the rumor that we have had, as Bill Tompkins has been saying, large spacecraft for many decades flying all around this solar system and elsewhere in our galaxy. So, all right, that's enough about Paperclip, I think, Bill, because most people listening have an idea of what it was and what it contributed to the program here and to our scientific culture. I mean, it was the lead force. Dr. Debus ran NASA. Dr. Debus ran Peenemünde. Just an extraordinary thing to think about. All right. Tell us, now these girls were building their own getaway ship. Not quite sure why they were offered transport out of here, 1,444 of them. And apparently they made it, but we'll get there. So tell us more about this whole story.
Well, I have to confess, I wish I knew a lot more, because it's a very interesting subject. But the young ladies put together their program. They built the two UFOs that are out at Area 51 now. They were their prototypes. They built also several Delta-shaped vehicles, but they concentrated on the transports because that's what they were told to do, and they accepted, with nobody pushing them, the mission to leave the planet. Go to another star's planet and live there, which would be a utopian life. So you have to say, well, who told them to do this and who talked them into it? And the area that I feel is most correct in this is that, yes, there's Nordics. Nordics are usually tall, blonde, blue-eyed young ladies. But many of them are dark-haired, too. But they're all light-skinned. And they are not just one group of humanoid Nordics. Today, it's been accepted, at least in our area here, that there may be as many is 95 different types of extraterrestrial people who have the appearance of close to a Nordic type person. These are different civilization people. Some of them are very nice, others are not very nice. And so they are just part of this entire story that we're trying to learn about and present to the audience here. But the first girl then managed 12 other girls, and they then contacted many other people in and out of Germany in European area, And they then decided that they would go and collectively build very, very large, quarter-kilometer-long space transports, leave the planet, bring all their friends, all their relatives, and to the extent that you could have as many as 1,000 people on board. So this is not a small vehicle. It's not a UFO. These are massive cigar-shaped vehicles. And for these young ladies to go do this is obviously, nobody believes this.
Well, they had to have engineers. They had to have tool and die makers. They had to have state-of-the-art technology. They had to have an awful lot of support, tech support, to do this. They didn't just get out there with, you know, a welding torch and some cutting tools and start to put these things together.
You're absolutely correct. And yes, along with this, there were many ranchers and farmers and like shoe salesmen in Berlin. And but these people took loans on their homes. They borrowed every penny they could get to get materials. And then they collectively, with the support of the extraterrestrials, were building UFOs and then building large space transports. Now, this young lady, from what Frank has indicated, disappeared after the end of the war. But before she had disappeared, she and many of the others had taken off in their own vehicles and gone out to some of the closest stars to our sun and come back. And their base was in Antarctica, in one of the large caverns. So they built these facilities. It's not that they didn't build them. They built these. And they were building extremely large ones, much larger than the first cigar-shaped vehicles. And yes, they were anti-gravitational propelled, which none of them knew anything about before. But everything was given to them to accomplish this. And like we've said before, when the SS found out what they were doing in the start, at the beginning, they confiscated everything that the girls were doing and these other people. And then they allowed them to go onto a separate space development program in Antarctica. And this was in parallel to everything that the German SS was doing in building production UFOs and spacecraft carriers. So the young ladies have the photographs that they have here. That's all of one person, with the exception, I believe, of the young lady that has the cigarette.
There's a blonde, Maria Orsic, and two pictures of a brunette.
Yes.
That's what we have.
I only have one picture of the brunette, but I guess I misunderstood from what I heard about that group of photographs that was supposed to have been Maria. So I'm glad you covered that for us.
Jeff, I'd like to ask Bill. Bill, did the operatives bring back any information when you folks debriefed them about Maria Orsic and her project with Aldebaran?
Aldebaran, for our audience, is the name of a planet. I'm not sure if it's in this galaxy or another galaxy. It could be on the other side of the Milky Way. So we need to hear a little bit about Aldebaran.
I believe it's a star system, Jeff, and it's 68 light years from Earth.
Okay. All right.
And from what I read, Maria was given information how to develop and open up either a wormhole or a warping type of portal to be able to go from Earth to Aldebaran.
Now, we have a picture of that, a graphic representation of that kind of concept right after their pictures on our picture page tonight. So if you scroll down, you'll see that. Okay, so they're making plans to get out of here by 1945. The SS is carrying on trying like crazy to build their line of disc craft to defend the Reich, but they're running out of time. What What happened? Now, you said they were going to build an enormous craft, which would be very hard to find from aerial overflights by the Allies in Germany, unless it was very well camouflaged. Did they end up building that, to your knowledge?
Yes, they did, but these were all built underground in mountains.
Okay.
And so you don't see the vehicles at all until they go into a test facility.
Right.
And the 8th Air Force did, and some of their investigator pilots did see these vehicles. And so it's not that they didn't get built, but that was at the early area of the war, not near the end, because everything, almost everything, was taken out of the underground production facilities and put in the SS Navy submarine transports and taken to Antarctica, never surfacing, because they go in to the caverns underwater, and they can come back out again for another trip. So you don't even see them. And it's interesting in that part to where China has a massive island in one of their chains, and it is an enormous Chinese Navy base, and their submarines operate from underneath the water just like the Germans did. But that's a system that's being operated right now.
I wanted to mention to Jeff, and you can mention this to the audience. I'd asked you if Dr. Debus was aware of the Aldebaran connection as well as the Maria Ursa connection, and you said he was well aware of that.
Yes, he was very much aware of that. And but that was not something, like we've said, that Jeff has said, this is sort of kind of new for the subject. We haven't studied it, and this is another one of the things that needs to be accomplished in aerospace. But the result of paperclip, which is the other major problem that we got into here, where not only a great deal of hardware was taken from Germany that was left over to both Russia and the United States. But the personnel came over here. And what I want to say at this point, if I could, it's difficult for the public to accept that not only, as Jeff said, the SS actually ran the Apollo program with all the German scientists developing it.
Right.
And not only that, but these German scientists infiltrated all of the American aerospace corporations. And I say, I use the word infiltrated because that's actually what they did.
Did you meet some at Douglas and Lockheed and the other companies you were with? Did you ever, Thomson, Ramo, Woolridge, did you run into any Germans?
Yes, and I would like to use the principal one that we had at Douglas. This fellow, I don't know whether he's alive or not and whether he's going to call up and have me taken out, but this fellow came in around the Apollo time in engineering, and nobody quite knew what his job was. But he essentially took over advanced design. He took over the commercial aircraft part. He took over naval and air force contracts. He supposedly managed pretty soon everything. And he threw wrenches into the gears for 3 years of the Apollo program.
Why? What was his agenda in slowing? what was his
what
deal?
What was his agenda, okay, to stop Apollo? This never showed up. But what it really was is he was removing the technical capability of engineering at Douglas, which they were doing over at Lockheed, North American, Boeing, Northrop, all of the aerospace companies, all of the biomedical research companies, and in destroying our capability. Now, he actually wasn't stopping the Apollo program, but they were setting up destruction of United States military capability. Now, this is nothing but a extraterrestrial mission. As we've talked about before, our history, all the way back that we teach our students in the high schools and in the universities, is all incorrect. And we haven't accepted this across the country. But that's another part of the destruction. When a country gets to the capability technically to accomplish the Apollo program, it has to be stopped. Because we're not being allowed to penetrate their territory. And this fellow, he came over here to make sure that the Douglas Engineering Company couldn't make it.
Yeah, keep going, Bill. No break, Todd.
Just a second longer here. He got into manufacturing, the manufacturing vice presidents of Douglas.
Right.
He so destroyed the company that our vice president of engineering, the guy that I work for, and incidentally, that Dr. Bob Wood, who was editor of my first book.
Yes.
Bob knows this whole thing, too. And this guy was destroying everything in the company to the extent that he, our vice president of engineering, could not continue all of this research that we're trying to get into that we're discussing today. So he finally quit Douglas and went over to Lockheed and took all the information over there and became head of their secret think tank at Lockheed.
Well, was this guy some kind of a bitter who couldn't come to terms with the fact that, technically speaking, Germany lost the war and was trying to get even? What was his agenda? I don't understand it.
No, all
yes,
of the agendas
were provocateur.
What, Bill? What?
Provocateur.
He was a provocateur. Okay, well, that's obvious.
He was hated
by
his own men. Jeff, he was hated by his own men.
Oh, there. Okay, you just answered the question. All right, he was a rebel, a renegade. He was a bad apple. He was a malignancy among all who came here to continue their good work. And their good work, I mean their engineering work. All right.
What's
interesting is most of the people who came over were all approved by Alan Dulles. Mm-hmm. Who was he reporting to? Who was Dulles reporting to that he had that kind of authority mm-hmm. to bring over people and to place them into these programs?
You know, remember part of the big deal to get all the German scientists over here was that Adolf Hitler, Eva Braun, and thousands upon thousands of other German government officials and party members were given free passage many times on American DC-4s to Argentina and South America, primarily southern Argentina. Entire German communities and small cities grew down there, and that's where they went. That was the trade-off, a trade-off that FBI Director Hoover didn't even know about, and finally he had to be told to call his men off, and he issued a memo, which we have a copy of, that said, from this point on, there will be no further efforts to try to find Adolf Hitler in Argentina. He ordered all of his men to stand down. This was in, 1946, 47. So,
yeah.
Interesting stories.
Also, in Argentina, there are massive underground caverns.
Mm-hmm.
There are facilities underground, just like they had in Germany.
I believe it.
It's not just Antarctica. And, you have to ask yourself the question, When our admiral put together a program after the war to go down to Antarctica and try to curtail the German development that they had down there. It has been reported that UFOs came out of the ocean and shot down all of our aircraft.
Well, that's been, Bill, to be honest, that's been largely disputed. We don't know the truth of the story. There's as much pro and con information out there vying for supremacy that we just don't know what happened. Not
well, that's
sure.
True, but if you'll take a thought on it, most of those vehicles that came out of the ocean and shot down all of our aircraft, and that's what did happen, were German vehicles,
right.
UFOs.
Right. And also...
They were not extraterrestrial.
Right. In 1953, the overflight over the White House, also supposedly German vehicles, coming up to tell the U.S. to leave them alone.
Back off.
Right.
Yes.
Well, it's an amazing story. Okay. Bill, we have about 25 minutes left. What would you like to talk about tonight that we haven't gotten to yet? And we have, again, presented a wealth of material for all of you listening to consider as you process this whole story of German flying discs and advanced anti-gravitational or electrogravitic technology. It's all there for you to look at. And that interior shot of that one large craft is pretty amazing to look at. They're all amazing to look at. Are some phony? Probably. Some are real? You bet. And we do think we have the world's only surviving available piece of footage. It's 8 seconds long of a flying German disc. And you look at that in the video and think about it for yourself. But it's pretty remarkable.
Jeff, can I make a suggestion? If Bill would be so kind as to share the story of the three German flights to Mars, the operatives shared with them before the war ended.
Sure. What did the spies tell you about Germany going to Mars?
Well, they had substantial information that these missions took place from Antarctica, not from Germany, and that the first one that went back had a real problem with the landing, and it did crash, and all of those people, all the crew, were killed. But almost less than a month later, because they had been building a number of that class, they sent, there were two more missions that went to Mars. And those missions were a supposedly support for future programs. Now, I want to step off of what Frank is asking, and I want to get into technical progress versus time program, where North American aviation, the people that built the space shuttle, okay, they're in on this program as Lockheed and as Northrop and the other top people. But in a time period, I'm stepping ahead now into 1997, they put together a program to, now this is North American Aviation, to develop vehicles and train personnel, leave the planet, stop on Mars, and build a facility there to mine materials. It's a commercial operation. And then a couple of years later, they took this block diagram that I had created in the think tank at Douglas, which is a 8-10 foot long piece of paper with nothing but blocks on it. And it's a system development plan for development of any normal weapon system that the military has to use. And it's a concept phase, definition phase, operation, and operational phase. And so they made this document, and the fellows that have seen this know how complicated it really is, because there's so much information on it that you can hardly read the document. And there's many lines. They went both horizontal and vertical, whereas mine were always horizontal. You have every block that's necessary to accomplish the next phase of any program. So they developed this one, 97, 98, 99, and that was to go to one of our closest stars and set up a mining operation there, a permanent mining operation, mine the materials and sell it to other extraterrestrials who on a commercial basis. Now, this got nothing to do with a military program or UFOs coming here and with war and all that stuff. This is a commercial operation. Now, if we'll go back to the Douglas secret think tank, the first part of that had nothing to do with military. To develop vehicles and capability, get the capability to go out into the galaxy and have commerce with our other stars, people out there. And we could operate from here, or we could operate at their facilities. So what I'm saying to you, people don't accept again what we're saying, but there are hundreds of companies here on this planet who are out in the galaxy, as we're talking today, doing commercial operations, mining materials, and working and communicating operating with other stars, people, other star systems, planetary people. That's going on right now.
How do you know this, Bill? I'm devil's advocate here. What is the proof of that?
Okay, I've got a copy of the document and all of the names of the people that are on it who put it together, and incidentally, one of the people from the secret think tank of Douglas is listed on that document.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be very interesting for you fellas to get a copy of that, look at it, and say, oh my gosh, what are you talking about? You have to read the details. You have to read
the details of that development plan. It's a Douglas-drawn plan, the one you saw.
It's a concept, Douglas concept plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's called systems management.
Mm-hmm.
And every Air Force or Navy contract company, if they're going to do a military system, that today they have to use Air Force 375, which is my design. Okay. Separately from that, I took that stuff after I got fired from Douglas on the Apollo. I went to work for North America. I went to work 1 week to the day after I got fired, because that's another story. But
right.
What I'm saying is, many years later, North American Aviation had been using this development concept for military programs. Then they put together a commercial one. And I have to say, you're asking for documentation, what's proving. You have to look and study the document. When you get through looking at it for 10 or 15 hours, because it takes that long to understand it, you're going to say, oh my gosh, that's real.
Jeff, I sent that to you, if you recall, several months ago. It's the Integrated Space Program.
Yeah, you better send it again. It's
I'll send it again.
Yeah,
I sent a copy to you and a copy to George Filer. You might want to post this. As Bill was saying, it is so minutely detailed, it would take you 10 or 15 hours to read it. I mean, there's so much information in it. Hmm. And Dr. Wood told me that all that had been achieved decades ago.
And you say, okay, where did Bill get this systems management program thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody stuck some stuff in my head, okay, and I ran with the ball. But the North American space shuttle vehicle, or vehicles, those are only one that ever got put in production. Boeing had one. North American had five. Northrop Grumman had five. Lockheed had three or four. Of space shuttle type vehicles, many of which were military, naval mission military. So, yes, they were working on the space program, but the important thing we're saying here is that North American and many other companies took the military type operation and developed the capability of building their own vehicles and then going out into the galaxy, stopping at different stars, planets, picking out the planet they want, and setting up mining operations on these planets. And you're going to read and look at the document, and yes, it takes 15 hours to even get a feel for the magnitude of that program.
Go ahead.
One piece of paper will do it for you.
All right, this is obviously a globalist corporate kind of an endeavor with an off-planet intelligence. It has to be. But what are they doing? Are they receiving material? Are they exchanging it for valuables, commodities like gold? What's the trade-off?
The trade-off is unlike any monetary system that we have.
I'd say.
And that relates then to the life. The life of the Solar Warden people, the crews, they never come back to the United States, maybe after they retire. But the crews and their families are living out in the galaxy. They're living on other stars, planets. They're living with Nordic families because of the Nordic Navy, that your U.S. Navy, Space Navy, operates with the Nordic Navy. And yes, there are wars that they're into as we're talking, but that's way out in the galaxy. Don't have the war here. But what I'm trying to say is this other part is just plain commercial. But out there, you have an entirely different life. People are living much longer lives out there. And look at the life of a naval officer who had spent his 20 years out in space on Solar Warden spacecraft carriers.
Mm-hmm. How many craft are involved in Solar Warden in our solar system? How many are out there now? Any guess? And where is their primary base? Do you know?
Okay. All I can say is you're asking a question, where are they?
There are some things that you cannot talk about still. I understand.
I'm not going to say that, but I will say that this program is, our little part of this program is a grain of sand. And I said this before, and I know that people will not address it and will not accept it, but your planet is just a laboratory. It's a large laboratory that has been used by hundreds of extraterrestrials for their agenda for thousands of years. Maybe the Dracos and the Reptilians do most of it. But all these other people are coming here. Now, when you put together the hydrogen bomb and you bomb Japan, okay, you blew a whistle out there. That's a no-no. And then later on, you got all these naval ships from every navy on the planet, and you took them out to AMOE talk, and you blow them up. a whole bunch more extraterrestrial civilization ran over here, because you don't do that out there. That's a no-no. It's not a military weapon.
So they're using the Earth as a laboratory.
Just back off for a minute. Let's talk about your moon. It's not your moon. Okay, that is not your moon, and that is not a moon.
It is an odd planet. All right, what is it?
Okay, it's a command control center for this region of this part of the Milky Way galaxy. We happen to be a close planet, okay? And we have some of the nice facilities where everybody can bring their people here, all the different civilizations, all the different colored people and yellow people and whatever. Everybody's brought here, and you watch them do what they do, and then you have the wars. And so your entire history is wars. Too many questions.
Right.
And then you take and blow up this battle group out in the Pacific.
Well, once we cracked the atom, we stepped across the boundary.
You stepped across the boundary, sir, and you don't do that. Now, there's an area on the Internet which is showing a moving situation where there's a stack of vehicles going across the picture from the right to the left, and behind them, other vehicles are going from left to right. It looks like downtown traffic in New York, because there are thousands of vehicles on space freeways, okay? And that's right out there. That's not way out in the galaxy. That's real close. And all these different guys have got different agendas, many of them commercial. Okay? This isn't all military. The highest proportion, it's commercial. Guys working together, different departments, different products. Some sell, some communicate and barter. But the point is, this is not your moon, and this is not your planet. And this is nothing but a laboratory for them. And who are them? Primarily Draco Reptilian. But then there's all of these other people with their agendas. And so right now, it's pretty much that they've done everything that they had or had to do. And so that's sort of slowing down now. And this is giving us, on the good side, with Nordics, the opportunity to extend ourselves out into the galaxy and join the group.
Well, I don't know if they're going to let us go out there with nuclear weapons, which is what we'd like to take with us, of course. But that should not be allowed. It should not be allowed. Sounds like some of these people are using the planet for a laboratory. Others are using it for a lavatory. I mean, I don't... I'm not real pleased with what we as the so-called dominant sentient species have shown in terms of our custodial prowess on the planet. We've wrecked it, and we're showing no signs of really doing anything but dumbing down the population, making them more servile, more stupid, and more obedient. And it's all being, of course, enforced by an electronic media that has never been duplicated in known history. It is so overwhelming. People just don't have a chance to develop. We're being dumbed down, and our lives are now being shortened. Our health is not as good. We're being poisoned. Look at the Monsanto insanity of genetically modifying crops. That stuff is going to spread all over the planet. Nothing will be the same. We have really blown it.
And
I
we
wish
have
somebody
an
would come here.
Bad reputation.
Well, we deserve it. Somebody would come here and give us an ultimatum. Stop or you're gone.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just
you
me.
Should have.
Bill, we're almost out of time. What would you like to add here in our last minute or so? And I'm going to get to George and Frank and get a final comment from them.
Just a quickie. We need to think positive. We need to accept that we don't have this good reputation. We have a very bad reputation for thousands of years. We don't seem to know how to be friendly with each other or friendly with countries. We've destroyed it.
Right.
But we do have, with certain species of Nordics, people who are trying to help us. And I think that the commerce side, such as North American Aviation has done, and other companies have, is our penetration, our vehicle, to join the galaxy, be accepted. And I think that's what we're going to do.
Well, step one along those lines will be to end this stupid cover-up and tell the people the truth. They have a birthright to know that we're not alone, and yet this government continues to cling to power to the great detriment of everybody. And it's got to stop. We don't have a government here. We have a dictatorship. It's a corporatocracy, a fascist corporatocracy. We've lost control of any representation we may have had. It has to change. It has to revert, or we're not going anywhere. We're going down. That's where we're going. So, Bill, thank you so much for being here. 3 hours of fascinating material. We appreciate you looking at the pictures and commenting on those. We've got a lot of them up there, and I hope you get a chance to see the video fairly soon. I think you'll like it. 8 seconds of real black-and-white footage of a German UFO disc flying over a runway. It's just a remarkable piece of film. Okay.
Can't wait to see it.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Jeff. Night. All right. Major Filer, step aboard here, sir. That was 3 hours you had to sit there and be quiet. You're such a noisy guy to begin with. I don't know how you did it.
Well, there's a lot of things that people may remember the book, The Intercept UFO, by Renato Vesco, who was a high-ranking Italian Air Force officer and senior member of the Italian Association of Aerotechnics. In any case, in his book, he claims that flying saucers were seen at the end of World War II flying over Germany. Just saying that that's something that he brought up. I have other indications that we may have got some and brought them here.
Right. Well, I think you can count on that. If there were any, we got some of them here. That's for sure. Some of them were in Czechoslovakia, too, I understand. Germans had a facility there. Anyway.
In Austria, I think, as well. Uh-huh. Any case, I met some paperclip people through the years.
Not bad.
The German scientists, and at least the ones that I met were very interesting and, you know, nice people, but one at least told me that they had seen UFOs out at White Sands Landing.
Mm.
Now, they claim that they were, it appeared that they were grays flying them.
Uh-huh.
Small gray type people.
Well,
in other words, I'm trying to give a certain amount of coordination to what Bill's saying from my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've also seen the blonde.
Yes, we know the story, George.
People
scared that poor woman, and she ran for her life. I know.
Now there's other stories.
Oh, holding out on us, huh? All right. Well, we'll have to get those from you sometime. Thank you, George, for being here as always. It's great.
Okay.
And Frank, thank you for putting all this together. Hope we did you well, and we got a lot of material out there.
Certainly did, Jeff. There certainly is. Jeff, I don't know, at some point you might want to share with the audience the project of gathering the information from Clark regarding Dr. Divas and Aldebaran and perhaps the Maria Orsic part of it.
Yes, yes. I have posted on the right-hand side in featured stories Clark McClellan's most recent 10 interviews, audio files.
Okay.
They're all
okay.
there right now, Frank. And I'm sure if you go through them, you'll hear a lot. And the last,
I'll start working on it, Joe.
The last three, four, five had to have the Aldebaran material and Deba stories. They're definitely there. So
I'll start sorting through it.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for everything,
Frank. Thank you, Frank. Thank you for everything. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, that's our provocative program tonight. Lots to think about, and enjoy those pictures and that video. I'll be putting the video up as well in the late news tonight. So we will talk soon. Have a wonderful weekend. And remember, things are not what they seem. Back soon.